The Canadian Species at Risk Act is a handy little piece of legislation meant to keep the country's wildlife from going the way of the dodo, or to pick an extinct species a little closer to home, the Labrador duck. In the 5 years since the law was passed, 516 species of plants and animals have been given government protection. But a new report published by biologists at Simon Fraser University has a surprising complaint about the act. It says that the act is biased against animals that are either cute, tasty, or both. Professor Arne Moers was a lead researcher in the study.
Professor Moers, what evidence do you have that Canada's Endangered Species Act is biased?
Well, it's a pattern that we found when we looked at which species were rejected by the federal government and which species were not rejected. And maybe I should have to explain what I mean by rejected. There is a body of scientists that propose species to the federal government, and then the federal government has 9 months to decide whether they're going to accept those species or reject them. And we looked to see which ones had been rejected, and they were overwhelmingly species that I think I referred to as furry and tasty. So they were mammals that lived in the north, and they were things that we harvested, mostly fish.
Give me some examples.
Of things that were rejected?
Yes.
Oh, the cod populations on the Atlantic coast, some populations of the beluga whale, the grizzly bear, wolverine, things like that.
Now, these are, I think most people consider those to be well-known endangered species that I certainly believed were on lists of protected species, and they're not.
Well, that's the irony, yeah. They're iconic species that I thought were on the list, too.
What is on the list, then? What do you think, where do you see the bias in the other direction?
Almost all the birds that were proposed were listed. Almost all the plants that were proposed were listed. Almost all the mosses, lichens, butterflies, they were all listed.
Why do you think that's the case?
Oh, that's a tough question. So I don't know why things were refused. We only have suspicions. I think people can make up their own mind about some of them, so the fact that we fish them probably had something to do with them. The ones that live in the north is a bit more problematic.
But there's also huge hunting industries. Do you think that's got something to do with it in the north?
That probably does, yeah.
What's the criteria used for designating an endangered species?
So the body that I refer to, which is called COSOIC, uses a set of transparent criteria that were set by the international body that looks at these things, something called the IUCN, and they look at things like how quickly the population is declining through time, how big the population is, whether there are specific threats to those populations. It's a sort of graded list that they go through, and they write, experts write reports, and those reports are then evaluated by this committee.
And then it's up to the government itself to decide whether to accept that designation?
Yeah, so that's how the law is interesting, I think, because the body that makes the designation has been around since 1977, and so they have lots of experience, and then, they know what they're doing. And then as the law was written in 2002, the government said that they would like to have 9 months to either accept, reject, or sometimes send it back to the committee for more work. And that's done at the federal government level. That's not done by, the experts.
And is that where you're seeing that the iconic animals like bears and caribou, Atlantic cod, are being rejected?
That's right. It's at that stage, exactly.
Some of the ones you've listed that are considered endangered, that love slugs and snakes and snails, the flooded jelly skin, that's a tree lichen, and pussy toes, all these things get in the list, but the big mammals don't. Mm-hmm. Is there a difference in how much it costs to protect those different species?
I'm not sure the process is such that we actually know how much it costs to protect individual species and how much it's worth to us to protect individual species.
What do you mean by how much it's worth it to us to protect them?
Well, how much do Canadians care about caribou and wolverine and polar bear and the dromedary slug?
And so that they would, based on what kinds of expenses, I mean, just paying tax dollars to protect them, or what it would cost us to change industry or change different kinds of businesses or what?
I think all those things. That's a whole area that I think is really interesting and probably understudied, is to know how do we even cost these things. But I think what we need is to have an open discussion about that, so that we decide as a society how we would go about costing, coming up with costs and coming up with benefits. I mean, how much is it worth? How much do we lose if we lose a species, for instance? And are some species more valuable than others?
But do you think that we, as a public, would even know that?
Well, when I say we as Canadians, I think that what's needed is a discussion among Canadians and among experts to look at these sorts of things. And there's ecological economists that do think about these things. They don't actually do surveys and ask people, well, you know, would you pay 10 cents a year to save the poor beagle shark or not? You know, you can, or would you rather spend that on something else? And, you know, you can do those sorts of things. But I should say I'm not an expert in that area, but I think it's very important.
How effective would you say this law has been since it was passed in 2002?
I would say, because it was only passed in 2002, we don't know how effective it has been. I certainly can point to things that have happened on the ground since the law has been passed, things that, you know, we're happy with. So species that were imperiled are being looked at, and money's gone in, and expertise has gone in, and things are happening. But, you know, those are a few cases that we can point to, and whether it's going to be effective in the long term, I think, remains to be seen.
What would you change if you could?
In the law?
Mm-hmm. Or in how it's applied?
Yeah, how it's applied. Well, I think those two things are connected. After a species has been accepted by the federal government, it's considered to be endangered. If it's not accepted by the federal government, it's not endangered, even if there are only a few left. And this decision is made in these 9 months after the scientific body has put forward the name. I would like to have a species listed and have minimal protection so that everybody knows that it is, in fact, imperiled, right? It isn't kicked off the list. And then we have some time to have that discussion about how much should we invest in this species versus that species.
All right. Well, very interesting. And I want to thank you for speaking with us today, Professor Morse.
I'm very happy you guys phoned.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Professor Arnie Moores, who he reached in Berlin, though he is usually to be found in British Columbia, where he's a biologist at Simon Fraser University.